with the Humane Society of the United States, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Radio is hiring. We are accepting applications for an engagement coordinator. The engagement coordinator is responsible for sharing KBOO's mission and values across a variety of social media platforms. They also share content created by volunteers and co-sponsors. We are looking for individuals who have skills writing marketing copy and creating and editing graphic and multimedia content. To apply, send your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org. Applications are due by midnight Sunday, June 4th. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. For more information, go to kboo.fm/engagement-hire.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Good morning and welcome to this month's edition of Voices for the Animals. I'm your host, Michelle Coppola, and what you're hearing there is the sound of hundreds of breeding dogs in cages, living lives of misery to produce adorable Frenchies and Golden Doodles, Yorkies, and other purebred and designer puppies people just can't get enough of. Well, you might think that with all the adopt, don't shop hashtag messages and increased awareness about the plight of homeless pets, that the majority of people these days would get their pet dog from a shelter or rescue. But believe it or not, that's not the case. The latest statistics from the American Veterinary Medical Association show that over 43% of dog owners got their pet from a pet store, online, or from a breeder. Unfortunately, many of them fall in love with a cute puppy and don't realize that what they're supporting is a large-scale puppy mill or a backyard breeder who is motivated only by profit and really cares very little about the welfare of animals, even the ones that are providing them with a living. While yes, there are local laws and even national laws that supposedly protect breeding animals, they have not been enough to stop horrific violations that are occurring at puppy mills every day around our country. Because of that, earlier this year, a bipartisan group of lawmakers introduced Goldie's Act, H.R. 1788. It's a federal bill that's part of the larger farm bill that's now being considered in Congress. To talk more about this important legislation, I want to welcome Robert Hensley. He's the Legal Advocacy Senior Counsel for the ASPCA. Thank you so much for being here, Robert. Let's talk a little bit about the origination of Goldie's Act. Can you tell us what prompted the creation of this legislation?
Sure. So for decades, the USDA, which is the federal agency entrusted with the care of animals under the Animal Welfare Act, has simply failed to enforce the law. They've allowed rampant violations to go unreported and unpunished. Their inaction has encouraged cruelty and allowed animals to suffer and die on their watch. So in 2021, the ASPCA helped rescue more than 400 dogs who were living in horrific conditions at a USDA-licensed puppy mill in Iowa that was operated by Daniel Gingrich after the USDA had utterly failed to do its job. Over a six-month period, USDA documented more than 190 violations of the Animal Welfare Act at Gingrich's facilities, including dead dogs, dogs with untreated injuries and illnesses like parvo and distemper, dogs in cages that were too small, moldy food, all the horrible things you can imagine. And USDA had multiple opportunities to suspend or revoke Daniel Gingrich's license for a year and a half almost after they originally licensed him. Gingrich would not allow inspectors on the property. But what did USDA do? They simply renewed his license for another year, even though they were unable to inspect for over a year.
That's incredible.
Ultimately, they imposed no monetary penalties. They refused to confiscate any of the animals that they found suffering. And the dog that Goldie's Act is named for was one of the dogs that lived in squalor and tragically was allowed to starve to death over several months while USDA inspectors observed her deteriorating condition but did nothing to help her. Despite her suffering, the clear violations of the Animal Welfare Act that were causing this suffering, the USDA inspectors failed even to record Goldie's existence in their inspection reports. But to be clear, their failure here wasn't the result of, you know, a bad apple or a misbehaving inspector. The active concealment of Goldie's suffering was USDA policy.
Wow. Well, before we talk about what broke down here, let's back up a little bit. You know, some people listening to this might think that Goldie's story is kind of an extreme one, that it's, you know, an outlier, that it doesn't happen. But actually, that's not really the case. Can you describe basically what life is like in general for most dogs and their puppies in these large-scale breeding facilities, and for that matter, smaller ones and backyard breeders?
So we consider puppy mills to be large-scale commercial breeding operations where profit is given priority over the well-being of the dogs. And, you know, these commercial breeders who sell wholesale, there are approximately 2,000 of them that are licensed by the USDA across the country. And at any given point, these facilities house about 250,000 dogs and puppies.
250,000 dogs and puppies on these large-scale breeding operations alone, and that doesn't count backyard breeders and smaller-scale breeders, right?
That's correct. These are just the breeders that sell wholesale and selling across state lines. So they're selling to, you know, to pet stores or over the internet. So no, these are that does not count small-scale breeders who are selling face-to-face or backyard breeders. But even those that are supposedly regulated by the USDA often live in horrendous conditions. USDA regulations would allow an adult breeding female to live in a cage about the size of a dishwasher her entire life, and that would be perfectly compliant with USDA regulations. We, through the Freedom of Information Act, receive photographs of what it's like, photographs and videos of what it's actually like in these facilities, which we do make available. And, you know, they are shocking. You know, these are the, you know, the dogs that Americans consider to be pets, who, you know, live inside with us, you know, sleep on our couches. But unfortunately, the dogs, particularly the breeding stock in these facilities, they are not pets. They are treated like livestock or worse. They are bred until they can't be bred anymore, and then they are euthanized or discarded.
Right. You know, I know that there are rescue operations that specialize in trying to rehabilitate breeding dogs from puppy mill situations, and it is often a Herculean task because these are dogs that don't get any sort of human interaction, really, other than being fed and watered. If they're given that, they're rarely given vet care. Oftentimes, they live in wire cages where there's no comfortable place for them to sit down, nothing soft.
That's absolutely the case, and dogs that the ASPCA has been involved in rescuing from puppy mills and also in hoarding situations often have severe behavioral problems.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the dogs come in with having had absolutely no human socialization, extremely terrified of humans. Many of them can be rehabilitated, but, you know, the suffering that they have endured, both physical and psychological, is just tremendous.
With that in mind, what are the provisions of Goldie's Act that would hopefully rectify some of this?
Well, there are four main provisions of Goldie's, and I'll also use Goldie's story to illustrate why are important. The first thing that Goldie's require, and I should say that most of the things that Goldie's require, the agency already has the authority to do, and in many cases, we would say they already have the legal obligation to do.
Right, because there's an Animal Welfare Act in place. I was going to touch on this later, but, you know, people think that there are local laws, there are federal laws, the Animal Welfare Act and so forth. There are laws already in place, but that doesn't seem to be enough here.
It's not enough if the agency that is charged with enforcing the Animal Welfare Act has a policy of not enforcing the Animal Welfare Act.
Right.
And that is, unfortunately, what USDA's policy is. USDA is an agency that has been captured by industry. And unfortunately, USDA does not work for the public or for the animals that it's supposed to protect anymore. If anything, it works to protect the regulated community by not enforcing the law and, as in Goldie's situation, often concealing violations.
So how would Goldie's Act address those problems?
So the first requirement of Goldie's Act would be for more frequent inspections of licensed breeding facilities. You would think that the facilities are probably regularly inspected, but in fact there's no requirement in law currently for any particular frequency of inspection. So some facilities could go for years without being inspected at all. Goldie's Act would first require the agency to inspect every licensed facility at least once a year. The second is life-saving interventions for suffering animals. The agency already has the authority and we believe the legal obligation to confiscate animals that are found to be suffering as a result of violations of the Animal Welfare Act. So as in Goldie's case, the inspectors observed her for a series of months basically starving to death, and they took no action. And as I said, it wasn't not just bad inspectors here. This was USDA's policy. So Goldie's Act would force the agency in a situation like that to confiscate the animal, to take it and get it the medical care that it requires. It would prevent the agency from turning a blind eye to animal suffering, which is its current policy. It's incredible, but in the 5 years preceding fiscal year 2022, despite documenting thousands of violations of the Animal Welfare Act, the agency did not confiscate a single animal. The agency did not revoke the license of a single dog dealer, and the agency did not impose a single monetary penalty against a licensed dog dealer in those 5 years. That is how bad the agency's lack of enforcement is.
I don't understand how an inspector can walk onto a property where a dog is actively starving to death and not even themselves physically offer food and water or bring the owner in and say, please feed this dog right now. You know, where does this break down? I mean, I know you mentioned that it's the USDA's active policy not to intervene, but I mean, is this something that has been going on just in the past few years during, you know, a previous administration, or has this been going on for quite a while?
The USDA does not have a good track record. Their enforcement has never been great, but it certainly did seem to get worse during the previous administration. And around 2018, there were a number of policies that were crystallized in the inspector's guide that led to situations like Goldie. So for example, the first time that inspectors observed Goldie's, Gingrich told the inspectors, likely falsely, that Goldie was under the care of a veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
So that was enough under the agency's policy for them not to record even Goldie's existence. Because if the licensee lets them know that the dog looks horrible, but it's under the care of a veterinarian, then under the veterinary care rule, which is in the inspection guide, inspectors don't record a violation or even the existence of the animal. The other policy that comes into play here is their courtesy visits policy. So the second time that Goldie was observed, it was during a courtesy visit. So what the agency is supposed to do is conduct unannounced inspections and record violations of the Animal Welfare Act. The law is extremely clear about that. But the agency has decided that it will also do things which it calls courtesy visits, where it arranges in advance for inspectors to go on the property of a licensed breeder. And during that visit, inspectors are prohibited from recording any violation that they observe. And so the second time Goldie was observed, her condition had deteriorated even further. But because it was a courtesy visit, it was USDA policy not to record any observations about her at all. And we have also sued USDA for its non-enforcement policy. We're in federal court with that lawsuit right now. And we're challenging, among the policies we're challenging are those two policies, because Goldie's case perfectly illustrates how those policies aren't just, you know, bad and, right, and aren't just, you know, unfair, but they actually result in the suffering and death of animals that the agency is supposed to protect.
Do local or state animal cruelty laws ever come into play here, or are they even enforced even less in cases like this?
They do, but one of the problems is, and you can't necessarily fault the locals for this, is that these facilities are supposed to be regulated by the USDA. And so often local authorities think, well, the federal government's taking care of it. Their inspectors are showing up, and if there's something bad going on there, that they'll handle it. But that's clearly not the case. Goldie's Act also illustrates, the problem with that here. Not only did the inspectors not, record Goldie's existence, confiscate her, ensure she got the medical care that she needed, but they didn't report any of their observations to local law enforcement. And to really connect the dots here, ultimately Daniel Gingrich was prosecuted for 2 counts of animal cruelty under state law and was incarcerated. And one of those counts was directly for the cruelty that Goldie suffered. So the USDA was personally observing a crime in progress. It didn't step in to do anything, report it to local authorities, but ultimately Gingrich went to jail for what the things that USDA observed. And I can tell you, if you see the pictures of Goldie, anyone on the street who saw a dog in this condition would immediately call animal control.
Of course.
Or the police. But what did USDA do? Per USDA policy, the agency concealed the crime. I mean, it's shocking, but that's their policy.
So I want to get back a little bit to this issue of enforcement, because I think this is key here. There is already the Animal Welfare Act in place. How would Goldie's Act help ensure that the law is enforced now, like it hasn't been in the past?
Sure. That is another important part of Goldie's Act, which is ensuring that there are meaningful penalties for violations. As I said, 5 years prior to fiscal 2022, the agency imposed no monetary fines whatsoever on dog dealers. And what Goldie's Act would require the agency to do is to make a penalty assessment, not necessarily impose a penalty, but they would have to consider imposing a penalty for every violation of the act. And ultimately what we'd like to see is if the agency decides not to issue a penalty, that they would actually have to provide some rationale for why they don't do that. But currently, what Goldie's Act would do is require the agency to go through the process of considering imposing a penalty for every violation. Because what happens now is, well, nothing.
Right.
But at most, what the agency will do on some occasions is issue a warning to licensees. But the agency itself says that warnings are not enforcement actions. They're just administrative correspondence, I believe is the term that they use, and basically wraps up the situation and nothing is done. So through Goldie's Act would require the agency, you can't just end it with a warning. You actually have to go through the process of determining whether a penalty should be assessed.
Aside from this act, to your knowledge, is anything being done to address or change the culture of non-enforcement at the USDA?
That's a good question. I would say that the agency is under pretty intense pressure at this point from multiple fronts. The ASPCA is suing them. DOJ is apparently investigating them. And Congress has issued some fairly stern statements over the past few years through report language or implementing legislation. Congress has repeatedly said that it is deeply concerned, and that's Congress's words, about how the animal care program is being managed. And there was a letter from 27 members of Congress recently that said, we're concerned that despite the strong direction in last year's bill requiring the agency to use their funds to properly record violations, that the agency has, quote, wholly failed to carry out the AWA's purpose. So there's public pressure, there's pressure from Congress, there's pressure through lawsuits. But as I said earlier, USDA is captured by industry. The USDA is acting to protect industry. I don't know what it will take. I think that it will take a new vision at that agency to make real reform. But until then, we will challenge them in the courts, and we will attempt legislative measures like Goldie's Act to force them to do the right thing.
So does this legislation cover just commercial dog breeders of a certain size, or do they also include animal testing facilities, livestock, farm animals, smaller breeders? What's the cutoff there?
So research facilities there are a number of provisions that relate specifically to them. So for with research facilities, you already have the annual inspection requirement. So this would, the provisions of Goldie's Act would probably have more impact on the other type of licensee. So you have dealers, and our primary focus has been dog dealers, who are either breeding dogs or reselling them through brokers. So breeders and brokers are covered. You also have exhibitors, roadside zoos, and things like that.
You know, one of the things that is unusual about Goldie's Act is that it does have, especially these days, this is so rare, it does have bipartisan sponsorship. So where does it stand right now?
You know, that's one of the great things about a lot of animal-related legislation, particularly when we're talking about companion animals, is that it's not a partisan issue. Democrats and Republicans all have dogs, and we all love our pets. And so, you know, it has not been that difficult in Congress for us to find bipartisan support. So the bill was introduced in the previous session. It was recently reintroduced in the House of Representatives by bipartisan team, and we do expect a Senate version of the bill to be introduced soon as well. You know, the Farm Bill is the single most influential piece of legislation on our food system. You know, directly impacts the lives of billions of animals, and it does provide, you know, an opportunity to also enact reforms that prevent puppy mill cruelty. So we are working with lawmakers, and many folks in the animal welfare community are working with lawmakers to get positive provisions into the Farm Bill if that's possible. We'll see. You know, the Farm Bill is one of those must-pass pieces of legislation. So if we are lucky enough to get something in there, then that may be the way that we can get, you know, some or all the provisions of Goldie's Act.
And of course, as I always do on this show, I want to encourage people to advocate for animals with their elected lawmakers. In this case, your lawmakers on the federal level, you know, ring them up, email them, get in their face on social media and tell them that you support this bill. It is absolutely so important.
Yes. I mean, the lawmakers are generally responsive to their constituents, but if they don't hear from their constituents, then they're probably thinking that no one really cares. So it is very important.
So before we wrap up, there is something, an important part of this I want to talk about, which is that ultimately ending puppy mills is about ending the demand for designer dogs and purebred dogs and that kind of thing. As somebody who works in shelter rescue and so forth, I really have never understood the need for a purebred dog, but I understand that a lot of people don't feel that way. And hey, man, those Frenchies are really cute. But if somebody thinks that they really do want a certain type or breed of dog, I know the ASPCA has a lot of good information on their website, but can you briefly talk about what should they look for, you know, if they're looking to buy from a breeder?
Sure, of course. The first step we encourage is to go to your local shelter. But if you do have your heart, you know, set on a particular breed of dog and you haven't been able to find one, in that the first thing you should do is contact a breed specific rescue. You still can't find the dog that you're looking for and you do decide to work with a breeder, it is very important to take the time and find a responsible breeder who is going to give your future pet the best start possible. So responsible breeders, first of all, do not sell to pet stores. They reject the practices of commercial breeders, brokers, pet stores, auctions, and these others who profit from cruelty. And instead, you know, they plan breeding carefully, they place stocks thoughtfully, they take lifetime responsibility for the animals that they bred and for all their offspring. A responsible breeder will, you know, always, you know, take back a dog that they have sold. The person can't keep it. A lot of times that may be required in the contract. So no matter, you know, where you begin your search for a good breeder, you know, it's critical also that you physically visit the breeder's home and see what are the actual conditions.
Mm-hmm.
The mother dog and ideally the other litter mates.
No meeting people in the mall parking lot.
You should see. I mean, these are pets we get to live in our homes, and you know, we think that that's how responsible breeding should ideally be done as well. You know, dogs should be raised in a home environment. They certainly should not be raised in barns unprotected from the elements.
And no light and no exercise with a stressed mother. I mean, it's just horrific, the conditions that a lot of these dogs are bred in. And you're going to ultimately get a healthier animal if you go and choose a responsible breeder and take those extra steps and don't just fall in love with something on the internet.
That's right. And I think it's always important to remember the puppies are completely adorable and irresistible, but think about the mother, the place where they came from, because you know, the puppy may be cute, the puppy may be healthy, but what was the cost of providing that puppy? You know, was it a mother who lives in a cage and has litter after litter after litter and has no life at all?
That is beautifully said. I really appreciate that. Before I let you go, is there anything else that the ASPCA is working on right now that you think needs more awareness that you'd like to mention? Or
so, in addition to the policy work and the litigation and legislation, the ASPCA has always provided lots of direct care for animals and does lots of boots on the ground work. So we also work closely with local police departments and animal shelters to provide training. We provide grant funding, we provide subject matter experts, and boots on the ground support for criminal cases involving animals. So over the years, we've done many large-scale rescues, such as occurred in the Gingrich case. We also do our best to train and educate law enforcement and prosecutors, because animal cases are not something that they frequently deal with, and so they may not have a lot of familiarity with how to investigate these cases, how to bring the prosecutions, and we also serve as a resource for them.
That was Robert Hensley, Legal Advocacy Senior Counsel for the ASPCA. I'm Michelle Coppola, your host, and on a personal note, I would like to encourage you to share this show link with anyone you know who is considering purchasing a purebred puppy. Ultimately, stopping the horror of puppy mills and backyard breeding starts with curbing the demand for these puppies, whose main pedigree really is the lifetime suffering of the parents who were forced to produce them. By the way, it's worth noting that about a quarter of all the dogs in animal shelters and rescues right now in our country are purebreds. So if you are patient and you take the time to seek out a specific breed rescue, you can usually find what you're looking for. Another thing to remember is this. Please don't choose a companion based primarily on looks. It's good advice whether you're choosing a dog or a human partner, by the way. You can find a podcast of this show and the link to share it on the Voices for the Animals page at kabo.fm/voicesfortheanimals. And that'll do it for this month's episode. Thank you so much for listening. And until next month, be kind to animals, each other, and most of all to yourself. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. This week, Jeff Godsell revisits a film classic, the only X-rated Oscar Best Picture, Midnight Cowboy. While in our DVD corner, we re-examine the new Criterion Blu-ray of Seventh Seal, and Matthew of KBOO's monthly bedtime story, Gremlin Time, looks at the new Finnish World War II thriller, Sisu. But first, Britta Gordon reprises a note on Ulrika Oettinger's Paris Calligrams.
Ich war 20 Jahre jung und mit dem festen Plan, eine große Künstlerin zu werden, nach Paris gekommen.
Sous le grand chapeau brûlé, maintenant l'éclat dans son
Sometimes the best memoirs come from small slivers of a person's life, the decompressing, the unpacking of a relatively narrow span of years allows for precision, focus, and time to